Helen Ziller is the federal chairperson of the Democratic Alliance. She is recovering, no doubt, after some pretty hectic weeks that have ended up in an agreement that has been applauded all over the world, including The Economist, which said South Africa can still teach the rest of the world about democracy. We'll find out from Helen what happens next after the formation of the Government of National Unity. Well, the obvious place to start is in September 2021, the BizNews conference in the Drakensberg, where you had a sheet of paper that you drew on. I know you gave me a hard time because you were only given 20 minutes to get it across, but you drew a triangle and you said, come 2024, the ANC will be below 50%. In other words, that was 3 years hence. The ANC or the nation would have a choice between the Democratic Alliance and a perhaps road to prosperity, and the EFF and a road to penury. That was really where we have to start this discussion, because at that point in time, people thought you were crazy.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I just see how the big forces are moving politics. And it was quite clear to me that the ANC had no foundational ideology or political philosophy or vision. And the only thing that can happen to a party when that is the case is that they fall apart. And the choice for South Africa would be between the constitutionalists and the racial populists on the other side, that I characterized as the political philosophy of the DA versus the political philosophy of the EFF. Now, at that stage, of course, MK was not on the scene yet. MK came onto the scene as the catalytic intervener. And when MK came onto the scene, then we had the situation of a very great strengthening of the EFF side of this triangle. And the battle was on to see where the rump of the ANC would go. And fortunately, they came to us.
If you go back those 3 years, clearly you had a vision. What did you do to prepare for just 14 days that you had to do the negotiations with the ANC, which eventually led to the Government of National Unity? How did you prepare yourself? And indeed, did you bring others to the party at that point, like the IFP?
Well, yes, indeed. We'd been working with the IFP for a very long time in KwaZulu-Natal. And you will know well that John put together the what he called the Moonshot Pact, that is the multi-party charter, it was called. Now we're talking about coalitions, then we were talking about charters. And John put that together. So we did a lot to prepare to try and get our side of the seesaw with a heavier weight on it. That's what we needed to get. And we did an enormous amount of preparation to do that. And so when the time came, the ANC obviously had a choice. They asked everybody to come in and speak to them. We ended up being the last man standing, if you excuse me using that phrase. We were the last man standing, and we strategically planned it that way. And then we could sign this deal before, and literally minutes before, the election for the speaker began.
Minutes before. So it went right down to the line.
Closer than you can ever imagine. I mean, when Judge Zondo called for nominations for the speaker, we still did not have a signed agreement between the ANC and the DA, and we still could not have been in a position to vote for Toko Dudiza as the speaker. And thank goodness, Floyd Shivambu stepped up to save the day. He called for that caucus break. The Chief Justice, who was presiding, was first very determined not to grant the caucus break. I was terrified that the DA might oppose Shivambu's request, so I was messaging them from the floor of the Cape Town International Convention Center saying, support Shivambu, support Shivambu. And the Chief Justice, the CJ, was resolute. He was moving on. And eventually, Floyd Shivambu was equally resolute, which for once in our lives was a good thing. and the Chief Justice allowed what he called a comfort break for lunch. And in that period, we could get the document signed.
Incredible. What is in there to ensure that the government of national unity doesn't fall apart? And I think this is really the big question that many people have, suggesting that, yes, it's good where we are today, but are there any precautions that will ensure that this goes longer than the one that was from 94 to 97?
Well, the 94 to 97 government of national unity was very much front of mind when we negotiated this. There's one huge difference between 1994 and today. Then the ANC had a supermajority, 62% I think it was. Now they only had 40%. And that puts them in a totally different bargaining position. And we've learned a lot about coalitions in the last 30 years in the DA. I've been in coalitions in the DA since 1999 in the Western Cape. And I've been part of managing many, many other coalitions since then. And we realized that as the smaller party in the coalition, you're always at greatest risk. All the teachings of coalitions worldwide tell us how profoundly at risk a smaller party is. So we had to get kind of framework agreement. We haven't got a detailed coalition agreement, but we do have a framework agreement that sets out how decisions in government are going to be made. Because from the beginning, we were absolutely determined that we would not merely be used as a crutch to keep the ANC in office to do business as usual. And we made it clear to the ANC that they did not win the election, and therefore they do not have a monopoly on decision-making. And we put in a mechanism that defined for the first time sufficient consensus, which is a concept that first came up at CODESA, if you'll recall, in 1993. But we got a proper definition in the framework agreement, which is crucial to the workings of the government of national unity. So you ask how we can be sure it'll hold. We can't be, Alec. The only thing we've got is the good faith of all the parties to stick to the letter and the spirit of the agreement and not just treat it as another piece of paper.
So what happens further down the chain? We've had chaos in cities, in Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, Nelson Mandela Bay, Thekwini, where a similar type of partnership would surely help a great deal. Is it going to be taken down to that level?
The first thing that must happen now is that the new parliament must pass the legislation that the DA has tabled, so that in 2026, when we have the next local government election, we aren't in a situation where the tail can wag the dog. There have to be thresholds if you want viable coalitions. And I'm proposing, but I know we've done it lower in the legislation itself. The legislation says you need to get 1% of the vote to get any seats in the seat of government for which you're contesting. I believe it should be 2%. And that would bring the number right down of the parties that could actually form a government. So instead of having 11-party coalitions, you might have 3-party coalitions, maximum 4-party coalitions. And then you can still manage the thing. So that is the thing that we've got to get right before the 2026 election. Otherwise, we'll have the same chaos as we're seeing in Johannesburg. But you'll be pleased to hear that during the negotiations, the situations with local government, and most particularly the metros, that is Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, Tshwane, Nelson Mandela Bay, eThekwini, they all came up. And we said that after this is signed and sealed, we will turn to other spheres of government, most particularly the metros.
Well, that is good news for people living in those cities. Helen, just to go back to one of the points that you made a moment ago about being the smaller party, we know from the news in 2010 when the Liberal Democrats was in the UK went into government because they hadn't been in government for decades, and they even had the Deputy Prime Minister. After that, in 2015, they fell apart. They went from 58 seats to something like 8. And they're still a long way from rebuilding there. Within the DA, was this an issue that you were able to find a protection against, that it doesn't happen to you in 5 years' time?
Well, we can't guarantee that it won't happen to us in 5 years' time. But that is why we put such emphasis on negotiating a framework agreement where we had some real leverage. And if you look at the agreement, we do have real leverage. But the challenge with coalitions is that your voter base must understand that you're going to have to make some compromises. That is the nature of the game. The ANC is going to have to make some big compromises, and we're going to have to make some compromises. But there are a couple of things that we've made it clear that we will not compromise on. And the most important thing then is to communicate and say, we've given up this, the ANC has given up that. Because to get a coalition to work of parties that have been such fierce opponents for 30 years is a challenge. It's a great challenge. But there's some things that are critical to us. And the statement of intent that we signed actually fortunately lists some of them. And the most critical is constitutionalism and the rule of law. That is a non-negotiable. And parties like MK that campaigned against the Constitution and the EFF that campaigned against the Constitution would, by definition, exclude themselves from a deal that is based on a constitution. There are issues in that document like non-racism, which is crucial to us. There are issues in that document like a merit-based public service, which is critical to us, and a whole range of other things that are very important to both sides. And as this unfolds, we'll have to keep going back to this document. We've based on the preamble of the Constitution, and we're going to have to keep on saying this was the agreement, and this is where we draw the line. It's not all going to be motherhood and apple pie, moonshine and roses. Definitely not. There are going to be some very, very tough debates. And who knows, we may leave the government of national unity at one point because the ANC has to know that we will not be walked over. They did not win the election. And we've made that point again and again. They are the bigger party, but they cannot govern alone unless they want to go into a minority government. And we don't mind going into opposition. That's our comfort zone. We know it very well. So we wouldn't hesitate for a moment if they violate the letter and the spirit of our agreement to go into opposition. And then Cyril Ramaphosa will have to run a minority government. And he won't last very long because there will be a motion of no confidence against him very soon. So it's going to be really important for them to understand the issues at stake.
But clearly you're going into the conversation from a position of positiveness, of working together, of hope for South Africa for the first time in quite a long, long time. The question, I guess, is how quickly South Africa can turn around. Now, Michael Louis had an interview with Chris Steinmark, colleague, where he said that South Africa, fortunately, is not an oil tanker, it's a speedboat. It can turn quickly. Do you feel that way about the economy? And are there any quick wins that are possible so that when you do get to the next election, your voters, the ANC voters, don't punish both of you for not enough progress?
Well, you know, expectations are sky high. And I always do my best to dampen expectations a bit because truly it's difficult to turn around government. I don't quite agree with Michael Louis. I know what it was like to turn around not such a broken government in Cape Town when we took over in 2006 and then in the Western Cape in 2009. It's very, very difficult. And as we've now experienced in Johannesburg and Tshwane and other places where the infrastructure of government and where officials have enabled complete decline and unraveling of government capacity, it's almost impossible. So I have to plead with people, you're going to have to be patient. Cape Town looks what it looks like because we've nearly been in office there for 20 years, and we've been working on this project for almost 20 years. Western Cape, 15 years. And that is what it takes. So people are going to be patient, hopefully, and understand that you need to get the basics right. You have to stabilize the finances. You have to uproot corruption. You have to get the right people appointed in the right places. That takes a long time in South Africa's legal environment. It takes a very long time. And people must please not have expectations that things will fundamentally change overnight. We will push them in the right direction, and we will make absolutely sure that step by step, like a young child growing up, although people who look at the child every day can't see it, eventually there's a fundamental transformation. And that is what it is like trying to turn around a government and trying to fix a government. We'll have to do it together. We'll have to have a lot of compromises with the ANC. It's not as if we have got an overall majority ourselves, far from it. And so when you don't have enough votes, you can't implement your manifesto as you would like. And I think one of the key lessons that needs to come out of this election is what I've been punting to voters ever since 2009. Do not fracture the opposition vote. I know that many other parties got 1, 2, 3, 4, even up to 6 seats. They'll do very little with them. We could have done an enormous amount with that extra muscle in our arm.
You mentioned 6 seats, and one of the parties that has got that amount is the Freedom Front Plus. They were your partners. Are they? They haven't come into the government of national unity. Is there any particular reason for that?
I think you'll have to ask them. They lost 40% of their votes in this election. And the person you keep on punting as the only adult in the room nearly didn't get a single seat in the provincial legislature. So, you know, they've got a lot of rethinking to do. And it's just so sad that all of those tiny parties only take votes from the DA. I mean, Rizal Zansi, that was punted day and night by the media, got good support amongst white liberal voters and zero support amongst black voters. And that is where they were supposed to have been able to make progress. This always happens. People say, well, we can't possibly vote for a party with a white leader, and therefore we want to vote for a party that has the prospect for growth. And then what happens? The party that gets far more black votes than all the other small parties combined is the DA. We got far more black votes than all those small parties, Rise, BOSA, Action SA, et cetera, combined. So the important thing to remember is that by splitting the DA's vote through level one thinking, you're used to saying level one thinking. That is level one thinking in politics. And to fracture and fragment the opposition vote through level one thinking has a seriously negative consequence for the country. We could have done very well with that extra 20 seats that were frittered around through splitting the vote.
As the votes were being counted and it was becoming apparent at the way the breakdown would be, political scientist Frans Cronier said that South Africa was really set on one of, it was a binary option. In fact, we'd been talking about this binary option in the election for quite some time. The one way was a road to prosperity. The other way is what he termed the Chernobyl option. Well, thankfully, we avoided the Chernobyl option. That road to prosperity, though, the performance of the exchange rate of the country suggests that the international community is terribly excited about this. We've gone from around 19 to the US dollar to below 18 to the US dollar already, and that's only in a couple of days. How long, can you give us any kind of a time frame that it might take before there are concrete evidence, given the experience you had in the Western Cape and Cape Town?
Well, the great thing about local government is that you can make progress relatively fast. And the reason for that is that you've got levers on things that people see and that make a difference. You can fix the streetlights. You can fill the potholes. You can make sure the traffic lights work. You can make sure refuse is collected. You can paint the road signs. All of those things make people sit up and say, my goodness, there really is a change happening here. And that is relatively easy to do at local level. That's why I can never quite understand why the ANC just doesn't do those things in Johannesburg. Maybe all the cables have been stolen under the ground, so it's not easy to fix the streetlights. I don't know. But in Cape Town, we found it very easy, pretty immediately, to get some things happening that people could see there were fundamental changes on the road. And then it was easy for people to say, wow, this place has really changed. And then by 2009, we got a majority in the Western Cape. And when you've got a solid majority, an overall majority, over 50%, it makes it so much easier to take complex portfolios like education, like health, like public works, and all of those things, and really get the basics right and push ahead. So it's much better to build from the top, from the bottom up rather than the top down. Much easier to build from the bottom up rather than from the top down. And now we've got to the top. And of course, it depends on the portfolios we can bargain for. Some portfolios are going to take a long time. Other portfolios will be much more rapid wins. And so it depends on the ones we get. But we have to say to people, give us time. Understand that it is very difficult, often with a hostile bureaucracy or an incapacitated bureaucracy, although there are often some good people in it. It is takes time to get things done, and especially when you have the problem of malicious compliance and various other things, it is extremely complex. So please give us time. We wished our metros had worked. You can see how hard it is to turn around a totally broken metro when you look at Tshwane. Celia Brimpe is doing absolutely heroic work, but he should be an example of what it is like to inherit a bankrupt city with a total broken bureaucracy, with infrastructure that is crumbling, with people who are not competent in many instances to do the job, and with hundreds of superfluous people who don't have actual jobs to do, and then with an underpinning of your bureaucracy that is riddled with corruption. And that is incredibly hard to turn around. And he is doing yeoman work in trying to do that. So yes, fixing South Africa is not an overnight thing. We first got to try and save this agreement. And we have to make the ANC understand that if they're going to treat us like some kind of crutch to continue business as usual, we will be in a position to say no. We're not going to be used in that way, and we are going to go into opposition. And if you're not prepared to play that card, and we won't play it lightly, but we have to show that we're dead serious, then we are just going to be one of those smaller parties propping up a bigger party in a coalition that is doomed to failure.
Just to close off with, the big story that you have been talking about for some years now is the devolution of power to the, particularly to the provinces. We know that in the Western Cape, it's been an intense frustration of the Democratic Alliance that you haven't been able to get your hands on policing, for instance, transport, rail services, and so on. Is that going to be a priority? Indeed, was that even raised in your discussions on joining the Government of National Unity?
We feel very strongly about devolution of power, and it is one of our most important objectives because we believe that a democracy functions much better that way. The ANC was very concerned that what we really wanted to do was make the Western Cape independent, which we said was never our goal. And in fact, we want the Western Cape to work so that the rest of South Africa can work. And our goal was, in going into this Government of National Unity at all, was to make sure that the rest of South Africa can work. So we're very committed to that. The ANC is pretty suspicious of devolution. They like centralized control. They call it democratic centralism. So that is one of the key issues that we're going to have to go toe-to-toe on. It's very important for us that capable local and provincial governments should have power to implement the key issues that affect voters the most.
I'd be remiss in not asking you about Mr. Zuma and his emergence and what that might do to the political scenario going forward. Have you any views?
Well, Jacob Zuma is a traditionalist. I've been called a racist for saying so, but he is a traditionalist. I tell the truth no matter how unpopular it is. And he was the most senior Zulu person in the field. And he pulled that traditional vote very, very strongly. And in KwaZulu-Natal, he got 45% of the vote. And if you look at the map of the outcome of the election across the whole of KwaZulu-Natal, you will see just how much field Zuma won. And except for a few pockets of the IFP and the DA, KwaZulu-Natal is almost all Jacob Zuma. And that was clearly the traditional vote. And he did well in Mpumalanga and parts of Gauteng. That was also the traditional vote. The Zulu speakers felt very bereft. They feel that Cyril Ramaphosa has insulted and humiliated a very senior Zulu person who used to be the president, that is Jacob Zuma. King Goodwill Zwelithini had died. Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi had died. Zweli Mkhize had been unceremoniously pushed out of government for the Digital Vibe scandal. And the full panoply of Zulu voters felt they can't treat us this way because of the identity solidarity amongst Zulu speakers in South Africa. And that is still a very huge factor across all groups, across all groups. And that, I think, explains a lot of why, despite the fact that he brought South Africa to the brink of destruction, there is still such support for Jacob Zuma.
But going forward?
Well, we'll have to see. Jacob Zuma is an elderly man now, although it doesn't seem to stop him finding nice young women and having babies with him. But nevertheless, he is getting on. And the question is, if he passes or if he retires, would Duduzile or Duduzani have enough cachet to step up to the plate? Because there, I'm sure there won't be internal democratic elections. I think it'll be the dynasty story. And Duduzile is very powerful. She's very articulate. She's intelligent and also very beautiful, which doesn't harm anyone in politics. And then you have Duduzani, his very suave and well-spoken son. And so the two of them might form a formidable duo, who knows? But there's already huge division, as you know, from Jabulani Khumalo, who was pushed out there just before the election. But that didn't cause a ripple in MK support for the very simple reason that this was an ethnic solidarity vote to a large extent. People don't like it when I say it. They attack me when I say it, but people don't really produce any alternative evidence.
Helen Ziller, Federal Chairperson of the DA. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.